This is CBC Radio in Morningside, and that woman's Megan with the laugh, and now to Midnight Cab. Today, Walker and Krista are embroiled in the mystery of the wounded poem.
Walker. Walker, where are you now? Walker.
Toronto?
That's good. Hey, why don't you concentrate a little harder? You're going to drive into a telephone pole.
I know, but I can't. I keep thinking about tomorrow.
Thinking, dreaming, hallucinating.
What do you think she'll say? I mean, the very first thing she'll say.
Probably hello. Then, are you the genius writer of this great work of art, Otherworld? And I'll say, no, he's hiding in the closet.
Jeez, what do you think I should say?
Well, you could say something like, hi, why don't you come in and sit down?
Do you think I should seem excited or more like cool?
Cool. That way you'll probably only look excited instead of hysterical. Walker, give it a rest. Everything will go just fine. Meanwhile, you have a pickup at 812 Wellesley Street East, apartment 416.
Yeah.
Walker.
What?
What did I just say?
Everything will go fine.
Other Worlds is my third unpublished novel. Except a few weeks ago, I received a letter from the publisher and owner of Lone Tree Publishing in Regina. Her name's Kate Millington. And she said she wanted to publish it. She said she thought it was the best novel written in Canada in the last 5 years. Now, I don't know whether publishers always say those kind of things, but I started to shake and my eyes burned like crazy and I had to sit down. Krista said I was hyperventilating, but I wasn't. I was vibrating from a place so deep down inside myself it was, well, kind of pitiful, actually. I was so grateful. Anyway, she said she was planning to come to Toronto on business in the next little while and would look me up. And then 2 weeks later, she called. She was in Toronto. And she wanted to come around to our place.
Walker, she'll be here any minute. Walker, what are you doing? I already cleaned in here. Walker!
The damn cat's got fur all over the place.
Where?
All over.
That's not fur. That's from Martha's teddy.
Well, that's stupid.
I told you were going to go hysterical. It's only a bit of fuzz. Walker, she's here. Walker, turn off the vacuum. Well, let her in.
You let her in.
Take a deep breath, okay? And let go of the vacuum.
So Krista swung across the living room on her crutches, went into the hall and opened the door. And this very tall, very large, very wide woman loomed up in the doorway wearing a black leather jacket and red slacks with a worn leather briefcase slung off her shoulder. Her jet black hair was pulled back into a long ponytail and she had two slashes of rouge on her cheeks that stood out like punctuation marks on her round white face. And immediately too, an open, hearty, and wide smile.
There, you must be Krista.
Hi, Kate.
Kate Rose Millington, publisher extraordinaire.
You're in the right place then.
You know, I should come to Toronto more often. You forget how cosmopolitan it is. People think it's a wasp enclave, but it isn't. I nearly got picked up this morning at a bake shop of all places by a Mexican. God, I love this city. So, where is he?
Over there.
Hi. You're kidding me. This is Walker Devereaux?
Yeah.
Actually, I think I could have guessed. Freeze frame this moment for my memory book. Hi, Walker.
Hi.
You're a wonderful writer. You have a magical story to tell, and this is why my job is the best job in the world. Oh, well, give me a hug. Come on.
Oh, okay.
Hello, Walker Devereaux. I'm so glad to meet you.
Me too. Me too.
Every writer dreams of that one moment. A phone call, letter, fax, hug, where a door opens up into the real world, money exchanges hands, and society seems to say, you can come out and play now, we believe you are who you say you are. Squished in Kate's arms, smothered in leather, I really felt that the door out for me was beginning to open.
So, Walker, this is the contract we use. It's quite simple. this section covers your advance. I'm afraid we can't afford very much.
That's okay.
That's good, because things sure are tight these days.
Within reason.
Pardon?
What?
I just said, within reason. I mean, $1 would be too little, and $10,000 is probably too much to expect.
It sure is. No, it's just the way the business is in this country. Even a very successful first novel's return on investment is going to be very modest.
Yeah, that's just the way it is.
If we weren't subsidized to some extent by taxpayers' dollars, it wouldn't be possible at all.
Wouldn't be possible.
Okay.
And this next section is your royalty per copy sold, indemnities, additional rights.
What's that?
What?
What?
Additional rights.
Oh, well, it's just if someone comes along and wants to make a movie of the book, for example. My company gets a percentage of Walker's fee for bringing it to the public notice in the first place. It's all very standard.
This is all standard. So where do I sign anyway?
Walker, why don't you read it first?
I just did.
You didn't read it.
You know, I'm not trying to swindle your husband, Krista.
Oh, I know, but I think he should at least read it.
Okay, geez, I'll read it. Give me a minute and, like, I'll read every word right now. I won't be a minute.
Take your time. I'm just so used to this contract, I forget it's all gobbledygook to anyone new. And, of course, all the agents know it backwards.
It's just that we really believe in Walker. Don't we, Walker? And his book may lose money, but then again, maybe it won't. Maybe he'll have a really big success with it and go on and have a really terrific career. And so we want to make sure that we haven't signed anything at the beginning that we'll be sorry for later on. Because we know there'll be a later on, don't we, Walker?
Yeah.
I thought you said you didn't have an agent, Walker.
I don't.
Oh, I think you do. Look, let me leave this with you. And here's another copy for Krista to look over. Look, I've got somewhere else to go, so let's meet for supper tonight and see if we can't make a deal. How's that?
That'll be perfect. Won't it, Walker?
Oh, my treat.
I should have guessed. I should have kept Krista off with one arm and signed the damn thing. You still look great.
Thanks.
I still love that dress. I love your cleavage.
Walker, shut up and try to think of something else.
Want another drink?
No, I'm fine.
What time is it now?
8:10.
Jeez, she's 40 minutes late.
People like her are always late. That's how they do it.
She's 40 minutes late.
I don't think we can stall any longer. We should order an appetizer. I'm starved.
Did you see the prices?
I'm still starved.
We'll order one then, for both of us, and maybe they'll give us some more bread. She's not going to come.
Walker, she will.
I should have signed that thing while I had a chance. We scared her off.
No, we didn't. What do you mean, we scared her off? Do you mean I scared her off? Well, thanks a lot.
I didn't say that.
I'm sorry I care so much, Walker. I'm sorry I'm here at all. I know you are.
I didn't say that you...
You dork.
Oh, yeah, well, that's great. This is great. This is really great.
Krista and I split a shrimp cocktail. There were 7 of them. Neither one of us would give in, so we cut the 7th one in half. And then Krista said she was sorry for spoiling things, and she had these tears in her eyes, and I said, don't be crazy. You're the best agent anybody could ever have. And Kate Ruth Millington? She didn't show up at all. The next morning, I was still stunned, and Krista was worried. She said Kate didn't seem like a person who'd be afraid to negotiate or say she changed her mind or call the restaurant if she was going to be late. And then, I got worried.
Good morning, Lone Tree Publishing.
Yeah, hi. I'm Walker Devereaux.
Oh, yes. Hi, Walker.
Oh. Hi. So, anyway, I'm just wondering, Kate Millington? She was going to meet me in Toronto, and she missed her appointment, so I was wondering if I could have a phone number or address where I could...
You lose it again?
What?
You called yesterday. Don't you remember? You said you'd lost your address.
I did?
I was in the middle of a meeting, but we talked briefly about your book. Remember?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Jeez, my head. I've been just so, like, excited, you know, and I've lost your address again.
What?
Yeah, that's what the guy said.
That's scary.
Yeah, 2 Walker Devereaux's.
That's scary, too.
Here's your coffee. Her friend. Where's she staying? I just called her. She said Kate didn't come home at all last night. Her clothes and stuff are still there. Her friend's kind of upset.
Of course she is.
She says that's not like Kate at all.
Of course it is, and I said that.
Yeah.
Well, so what's going on, Walker? Is somebody after her? Maybe he found her. Maybe. And he's using your name.
Let's not make a big deal out of something that's not a big deal yet.
I think when someone disappears, it's a big deal.
Her friend told me Kate's mother lives in a retirement home, Spring Hill Manor, up near Maple. She said Kate borrowed her car to drive up there to see her mother the first day she arrived in Toronto.
So?
So, well, maybe your mother suddenly got sick or something. Kate had to go back up there, and she's upset. She forgot to call anyone and tell her where she went.
I don't know, Walker. Is her friend's car missing?
She could have taken a cab.
Well, call up there and find out.
Yeah. The thing is, though, if someone is looking for her, I'd really like to find her first. Look, I think I'll drive up there.
Walker, if that guy knows your name, then he knows where you live, too.
I know.
I'm coming, too. And so's Martha.
So there we were, all three of us driving up to Spring Hill Manor. The woman at the desk said Mrs. Millington had some visitors, but she wasn't sure if her daughter Kate was among them and sent me up to her room on the third floor. I didn't ask if Mrs. Millington was sick. I figured I'd find out soon enough. Desperate writer pursues publisher all the way to mother's deathbed. And if she wasn't there, what was I going to say? I'd still upset everybody.
Yes?
Hi. I've got a package for Kate Millington. Is she here?
No.
Oh, has she been here, like, since yesterday afternoon?
No, she hasn't visited Mother since yesterday afternoon. Why?
Well, I'm just trying to deliver a package.
What package?
It's down in my car.
She's staying with a friend in Toronto. I'd be very surprised if she shows her face back here again for a long while.
Who is it, Carol?
Oh, it's just that writer looking for Kate. Isn't that right?
Well,
fortunately, his masterpiece is down in the car. Kate is not here.
Sorry. Carol's not that pleased with her sister right now. She doesn't mean to be rude.
Yeah, well,
but I think the best thing would be to mail your manuscript off to Lone Tree Publishing in Regina. Kate will catch up with it there. Know the address?
Yeah. I don't want to worry you or anything, but Kate was supposed to meet me and my wife last night for supper, and she never showed up. She never showed at the place she's staying at either. No one knows where she is, so we're, like, kind of worried.
Damn it. Okay. Thanks. Goodbye.
What are you going to do now?
I don't know. Drive over to Kate's friend, I guess. And report nothing.
Well, we're not going home. Drop us off at Aunt Carla's.
Okay.
Jeez. What?
Well, do you ever have dreams where you want something real bad, but things keep getting in the way and you never seem to get there? Like, I dream about playing hockey, but I can't find my skates, or I get lost between the dressing room and the ice, or my stick goes all rubbery.
It does?
It's like I'm having one of those dreams now.
Kate's friend lived in a small house in Lower Riverdale, just a few blocks above Queen Street, a poor, working-class district for generations until the 80s and renovation frenzy swept along the narrow streets. Her name was Eleanor. She had that no husband, no significant other, no teenage kids look about her, bright and squeaky clean. And she was worried, too.
Do you like that?
Well,
Simon, get off the nice man's lap. Simon, come on, Simon.
They don't pay a lot of attention, do they?
Now, Simon, I'm going to get cross.
So you didn't get home until late last night?
No, I'm a publicist for the ROM, Royal Ontario Museum.
Right.
And I had to go to an opening and a party. I got home about 1. The house looked exactly the same as when I left. Kate's a bit messy, so I peeked into the guest room just to check. She wasn't there, so I left the outside light on, but she never did come back. She's messy, but she's thoughtful. She'd never intentionally make me worry like this. Simon!
He seems to be looking down my throat. Why don't I just put him down?
He was like that all last night, meowing and pestering. He was so tense. You know, cats are very intuitive, you know. He realized Kate should have been home and it upset him.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. He kept jumping on and off the bed. He wouldn't settle at all. And going downstairs and meowing. Well, I thought he was hungry at first, but he was more interested in the basement door. He knows he's not allowed down there. It's not finished, and he intends to see it as a very large litter box.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So, everything was quiet except for Simon?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, no, not exactly. The police drove by about 3 a.m. They stopped down the street. I looked out my window, but I really couldn't see anything, just the red glow from their lights going round and round, and then they went away.
Eleanor, I don't want to alarm you or anything, but maybe Kate was here last night.
What?
Well, someone else is looking for Kate, I mean, besides us. They called up Spring Hill Manor and Lone Tree Publishing, and they got this address. So I'm just wondering, have you, like, checked your house this morning, the windows? Maybe he got in here and took Kate away.
What?
Eleanor went very white for a moment. Then we got up, opened the basement door, and went gingerly down the stairs. Simon leading the way, then me, then Eleanor. And behind the oil furnace, a whitewashed window was rapping gently against the breeze. Eleanor clapped her hand over her mouth, stared at it for a moment, then she said, "Now I am going to call the police." And I said, "Good idea. I know just who."
Hello, Walker.
Hi, Inspector Kiss.
Irwin Katz. Lives in a rooming house near the Queen Street Mental Health Center, appropriately enough. Found sneaking around on private property in the middle of last night. Somebody called the cops, charged him with prowling. You know, we're holding him over for court Monday morning. Got some disorderly conducts a few years ago. Oh, that's all it says. Does that help you out?
Not really.
Well, we'll talk to him real quick. Because 20-1 says he doesn't know a thing about your missing friend, which means you're wasting my time. I deal in corpses, kid, not beating toms.
I really appreciate the favor, Inspector Kiss, because we're all really worried.
Yeah. You know something? Interrogation rooms all smell the same. Piss and fear.
Yeah? Jeez. What's that stuff?
Personal effects, such as they are. Wallet empty, set of keys to his room, probably. A lot of Kleenex. I don't even want to think about that.
And a book.
Book. Looks like a collection of poetry. Because that's what it says. Collection of new Canadian poetry. Just what we need.
Can I see?
Yeah, sure.
Published in 1987 by Lone Tree Publishing, Regina. She should be put away.
She should? Kate Millington?
Yeah. People like her, no regard. Like, money, 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 money. Pretend, you know? They pretend. Oh, they know what to say. But they have no understanding. They think it's like bubblegum, or cigarettes, or chocolate bars. They don't understand the price.
Yeah, okay, yeah, just back up a bit, will you? So you were watching for her to arrive back at her friend's place.
To confront her. To finally show her the damage done. To make her understand the extent of her betrayal, so that she might see.
And you admit you broke in.
I didn't know whether she was already in the house or not. I couldn't tell. I had to know. I was ready to risk everything to confront her with the evidence. Everything? No. I have nothing. The nothingness of the evidence, that's what it was. The evidence was me. When you got inside, was it empty? It was dark and empty, except for a cat.
So what'd you do?
I left. I watched her friend come home from across the street. I stood in this open garage to keep out of the wind. I was cold. The police came. Irwin, I read your poem in here. I liked it. It's really a fine poem. No, it's ruined. That's what I'm trying to say, don't you see? That line, there. She reversed it. By mistake. This line should come first, and this one second. Read it again. Read it. It changes everything. It destroyed my career. It destroyed me. One review, a generally solid collection of poetry, except for one or two selections, most notably Irwin Katz's poem, Sheet Lightning, which is derivative, lacks either lyricism or bite, and is frankly, simply confusing.
It does. Jeez. It changes the whole thing, switching the lines around like that. It ruins the whole poem.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Irwin, did you touch Kate Millington? Do you know where she is?
No.
I left Irwin staring at the wall, mumbling away to himself in the interrogation room. Inspector Kiss almost thanked me for at least establishing what Irwin was really doing that night. He said he'd hold on to him until Kate showed up safe and sound. To tell the truth, Irwin Katz kind of scared me, not because I thought he was dangerous at all, just the way he was, he kind of broke my heart. He'd read in the paper that Lone Tree Publishing was going to have a booth at a book fair in Toronto. He'd figured she'd be meeting with a writer or two while she was in town, just like she did with him years before. He called her mother first, left a message, but no reply. So then he called the office in Regina, said he was a writer who was supposed to meet Kate, had lost her address and number, and the guy there said, "Oh, yeah, Walker Devereaux." And Irwin said, "Yes."
Oh, Walker.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you, the guy who broke in here, he was that guy the police picked up across the street last night, but I don't think
Walker, Kate's sister, Carol? You met her when you went out to Spring Hill Manor?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, she just called. Kate's up at the family cottage.
Oh, geez, great.
No, it's not great. She wouldn't answer the phone, so Carol called a neighbor at the next cottage, and he said Kate was there all right. He could see her sitting out on the veranda from his window. Carol told me she and Kate had a terrible fight. She's really worried, but she and her husband have to fly back to Ottawa tonight, and she asked me if I'd drive up there.
Oh?
Well, I'm not the best person in situations like this. I don't suppose you'd want to come up, too.
Kate was broke. Lone Tree Publishing, bankrupt. The bank was calling in her loans. Years before, Kate had talked her mother into signing over the family cottage as collateral. Now, the cottage that had been part of their family for three generations was lost, too.
Well, that's what the fight was over, I guess. Kate had flown in to talk to her mother and agreed to dip into some annuities to pay down about a quarter of Kate's loan so she could continue for a while. Well, Kate told me that much. She was really happy.
Yeah. Because she was, like, really happy when she came out to see Krista and me, too.
And then I guess Carol arrived, found out what Kate was trying to talk their mother into doing, and went
ballistic.
Kate struggled unbelievably hard just to keep her head above water. Our company all these years. It's probably hard for you to understand, Walker, but for her, it's everything.
No, it's not hard for me to understand. Hi.
Hi.
So? Favorite place?
Yeah. I love this spot. I see Eleanor's still afraid of heights.
Yeah. You're not going to jump off, are you?
No.
I didn't think so.
Sorry I missed our supper date. I must say you're the most persistent writer I've met in a while, though.
Since Irwin Katz?
How do you know about him?
Eleanor will tell you.
Look, Walker, I've had a bit of a setback. I'll need a little time. I have a series of cookbooks. I just need to negotiate a bit of financing.
Oh, man. Carol told Eleanor your situation.
Oh. Huh. Well, of course she did.
And about your mother and losing the cottage and everything.
I thought I could turn it around. Just one last time. I wasn't fooling. I love your novel, Walker. I really do.
Yeah, well. It'll get published one day.
Of course it will.
Now, at first, I thought Irwin Katz was kind of pathetic, and I guess he is, but he's kind of glorious, too, isn't he? I mean, he's never lost faith in that poem.
We're all obsessed, Walker. That's our problem. You, me, Irwin. What's so special about a poem? Or a novel? I've lost all this. And I was coming back to Mother for more. Carol was right. All I care about is myself. But I don't know what to do.
Kate.
What?
If you can't publish my novel, do you suppose there's anyone you could recommend it to?
Oh, Walker. Oh, God. You know something?
What?
I think you've just given me enough strength to wind up my company. Go as nutty as Irwin. As nutty as you, too. And start all over again. There's nothing can stop us, is there?
The Mystery of the Wounded Poem was written by James W. Nichol. David Ferry was Walker. Jacqueline Samuda was Krista. Neil Monroe was Inspector Kiss. Diana Belshaw was Eleanor. Brenda Bazine was Carol. Michael McManus was the manager. Derek Boys was Larry. David Storch was Irwin the poet. Diane D'Aquila was Kate. Greg DeClute was the recording engineer with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The production assistant was Nina Callahan. Music was composed by Milan Kimlicka. Midnight Cab was produced and directed by Bill Howell. You can hear today's episode, The Mystery of the Wounded Poem, again on CBC Radio this Saturday evening, 6:30 in most of the country, 7:30 in Atlantic Canada, and 8 o'clock in Newfoundland. In our next hour...